Hello and welcome to the Mejlis Podcast, Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs talk show focusing on Central Asia. I'm Bruce Pannier, host of the Mejlis and author of the weekly Central Asia in Focus newsletter. At the start of January 2022, peaceful protests started that swept across Kazakhstan. Other groups infiltrated the protests and sparked violence, seemingly with the aim of ousting President Kasym-Jomart Tokayev. Law and order broke down in several large cities in southern and eastern parts of Kazakhstan, and President Tokayev gave law enforcement agencies the order to shoot to kill. The government puts the death toll at 238. Thousands of people were detained. Some say they were tortured while in detention by police. Investigations have been underway since then, and dozens of people, including some police, have been sentenced to prison for their alleged roles in what is called in Kazakh Kandi Kantar, or Bloody January. But justice seems a long way from being served, and on June 5th, the Human Rights Alliance of Kazakhstan in support of fundamental rights released a report entitled Shoot to Kill that looks at the actions of Kazakhstan's government and law enforcement during the violence and during the investigations and court trials that followed. To discuss all this, I am joined by Tatiana Chernobyl, Almaty-based human rights lawyer, member of Documentation Center of Human Rights Alliance for Fundamental Freedom, that was established after the events in January 2022, and a member of the Coalition of NGOs of Kazakhstan Against Torture, Mira Rittman, who has spent many years in Central Asia and is the senior Central Asia researcher on Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan for Human Rights Watch, Yevgeny Zhovtis, veteran rights activist from Kazakhstan and director of the Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and Rule of Law. Thank you all for joining me. And Tatiana, if I could start with you, just for the benefit of our audience, can you kind of describe what went into compiling this report and which people and organizations participated in it?
Hi, everyone. Hello, Bruce. Yes, in fact, there were several organizations involved in drafting this report, and it's not the first report that has already been issued on what happened in January 2022 in Kazakhstan. So this one, to Shoot to Kill report, was produced and drafted by Bakhadjan Terigozhina's organizations, Aruhak, organization Aruhak, also a member of our documentation center. And Bakhadjan has a whole network of volunteers who helped her to collect information, to document the cases, to interview people. She went through around 1,000 of hours of audio recordings, talking to people. So mostly it was the efforts of her organization. And our documentation center has a database where we collected all the cases. So all that was included, all the cases were looked through, and they were included by Bakhadjan and others and drafting this report.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you. Yevgeny, if I could ask you then, I mean, you know, it says at the start of this report that it's being viewed from the right to life. And so how was the order that Tokayev gave, shoot to kill, was that justified in your opinion?
First of all, if we look at the course of the events started absolutely peacefully. And in some regions of the country, like Mangistau region or Karaganda region or northern Kazakhstan region, there were no clearly violence at all. Somewhere there was no even the actions of protest. In Mangistau regions, it ended up without any mass disorder or clashes with the police. And it starts peacefully turning from the social economical demands to political demands, but it starts to flow through around the country, ending in the southern part of the country, especially with the violence. That's the key problem, was what happens in this southern part where the peaceful protest turned violent. And at certain point, it was clear for us, and including we mentioned it in this report, and as Tatiana fairly said, we have a number of reports related to the issue, including the report on torture, including the which is cited in this report, including the report on the rights of detainees, right, who were detained during the events and right after the events. But what is interesting, that what happens in Almaty, in Taraz, in the southern cities of the country, where the events turned violent, it was clear that there was some kind of involvement of the local elites. and the groups, organized groups, some of them were criminal, close to these elites. And at a certain point, it was clear that the law enforcement and the intelligence are not looking like too loyal to the central power and to the President Tokayev. That at a certain moment, they start attacking, this organized group starts to attack the governmental buildings, including the headquarters of the police departments in the districts of the city, at least Almaty. That's what Mr. Tokayev said, from my point of view, was politically not accurate and not carefully said. But in principle, he was facing real threat to the law enforcement and police. And his order, which from my point of view should not be done by the president, it should be done probably by the Minister of Interior or the head of the intelligence, who, according our legislation, has this right to issue such order to shoot without warning if there is the imminent threat to the life and well-being of the police or the third parties. There were some kind of reasons to make this order. But this order was issued stated by the president in a very tense political situation and was, let's say so, reviewed or was viewed by the people as the right to shoot in general. It's not the right of the law enforcement to use weapon against the attackers of their headquarters or something like that, but in general. And what looks like and what is established in our report, that in certain way, the law enforcement look at this order as a right to shoot in general. And this is a problem with this order and the context in which it was stated.
Okay, thank you. We're going to keep developing this point a little bit, but I want to bring Mira into this conversation right now too, the discussion. What about this alleged coup? I mean, the government's been really cagey about that. I mean, I think it's worth clarifying that this is really what sparked it. But although there are some officials who have been prosecuted and put in prison, the government doesn't talk very much about exactly what was behind the violence. And then I'm also curious about the violence itself. Like Yevgeny said, it seemed to be an order, just a blank check to shoot to kill. Can you talk a little bit about some of the people or some of the cases where people don't seem to have really been involved in the protests or certainly not in the violence, and yet they were shot and killed?
Thanks, Bruce. Actually, that was one of the moments that stood out to me from the report is the documentation of several cases of children. There was a 4-year-old girl who was indiscriminately fired on. There was another boy who was just 12. There was a family with a 15-year-old daughter who was killed during outside curfew hours. And there were many other cases documented in the report. I can also add that Human Rights Watch, in our own reporting on what happened in January last year, also found documented times at which Kazakh authorities used excessive force. We looked specifically in Almaty between January 4th and 6th, and we found 4 occasions in which law enforcement used lethal force, such as shooting at protesters without apparent justification, that resulted in the deaths of 10 people. And as far as your question about what was behind the events and whether it was a coup, I think that really that question sort of speaks to the need for an independent investigation into what happened and a sober look at the full context, also with a view, importantly, on setting out the human rights violations and who's responsible for them. Because, you know, there is a dearth of accountability for the lives that were lost, the 238 people that were killed during and after the January events, for the allegations of ill treatment and torture for people who were tortured in particular. And that, you know, that a year and a half on now, we're here already in June 2023. And, you know, despite some of these cases that have moved into court, there is a very real question that stands before the Kazakh government about accountability for what happened and the massive loss of life. So, you know, and who was behind that and how did that come about? And we're talking about individual accountability for each of these 38 people, dead. Although the report that we're speaking about today suggests that even there were more than that. You know, that's outstanding still.
Okay, thank you. And Tatiana, I'd like to ask you to speak on the same point. I mean, what have you seen of the investigations into who's responsible for killings of what appear to be innocent bystanders, you know, just civilians that happen to be in the wrong place at the wrong time? And also, if you could, you know, like Mira just mentioned, your report says 256 people and the government says 238. If you could tell me a little bit about that, please.
Yes, not all of the cases of the people who were killed, given by the information that we've managed to collect, were mentioned in the government's report. And we are supposed that even more people who died during those events will be found about later, when people will be able probably to tell their stories, or when people who are being missed, their stories will be heard of. So that hence this difference in the numbers, because not all of the deaths have been recognized by the government as the deaths during those events. As for whether the investigation into what happened then was in fact effective and satisfactory, no. And we are still waiting, and as Mira correctly said, we are hoping there will be an international or hybrid investigation. It will be hybrid investigation of the events of January 2022, meaning that there will be international experts involved, as well as governmental authorities and civil society organizations in the investigation of the events. And 'cause only that independent investigation, not only produced by the government, will be able to show to everyone what really happened. And it's more than a year and a half that's passed since those events, and still I do not have the answer to your question whether that was a coup or there was that was something else. We still do not have the answer to that question. And as the report shows, there are several, as they're called, myths in the report around the events. I don't know how long more we are going to operate with this word, myths, about the events of those days, especially when so many deaths are involved and were the result of those events. There shouldn't be a myth about what happened then.
Oh, good point. Thank you. Yevgeny, can you also tell me a little bit about the detentions? And it's understandable that there's disorder in the city and you have to try to restore some kind of stability, some order within the city. But the detentions seem to go way over the top in some cases, and certainly the treatment of people who are detained. Can you tell us a little bit about what happened to some of the people once they were picked up by police and brought to the police station?
2 weeks ago, there was a very interesting roundtable, regional discussions organized by the UN Department on Fighting Drugs and Criminality and the UN Special Rapporteur on Freedom of Assembly and Association, exactly related to the issue of the law enforcement during the actions of protest, how the law enforcement is doing, what they are regulated by, and whether their actions are, let's say, so in balance with the threats they are facing. The problem is that in the events, January events, we have several let's say, divisions of law enforcement being involved. It was the divisions of the police, so-called public security divisions. Then it were the divisions of the intelligence, of the Committee on Security. And thirdly, there were the special units of so-called special forces, which are not the usual police, which is used for anti-terrorist, anti-extremist, and all other anti-mass disorder situations. And when the people firstly were detained by these special units, these special units do not use to talk to the people or to, let's say, to detain them more or less in a good faith and good manner. They used to beat people. They used to keep them in a special places and spaces which are not supposed to be used for the detention. And that this was the first huge violation of the rights. It was several thousand people who were detained with the use partly of these special units. Then these some of them were detained by the so-called public safety divisions, departments of the police, and then brought to the pretrial detention centers or temporary pretrial detention centers. We have to keep in mind that the police was very angry because they already have the information that at least 19 people were killed during these events of the police. And that, and then they feel themselves absolutely, they have free hands. They were beating people, and the lawyers were not, let's say, allowed to visit detainees. For several days, we were trying, including myself, I was talking with the ombudsperson at that moment, to allow the lawyers to visit detainees. And for several days, the lawyers, I'm not even talking about relatives, could not have any access to the places of detention. And the people were held in these places of detention practically incommunicado in certain way. And there was no real access of the independent for medical examination and so on. That's in general, the whole situation was practically total lawlessness. And we exactly pointed out in our another report exactly related on this situation of detainees.
Can I jump in just to echo that our research at the time last January in the aftermath of the events echoes exactly what Yevgeny Alexandrovich was speaking about, that people were arbitrarily detained for allegedly violating Kazakhstan's peaceful assembly law. They were held for up to days without charge. They had their phones taken from them. They were denied access to counsel of their choosing. They were, lawyers talked to us about how difficult it was. They were running around from detention center to detention center trying to access their clients and couldn't, or in the rare occasion that they could, they have to go through multiple checkpoints to get to their client. There's also the issue of detainees being denied access to medical treatment. So we documented four cases in which, security forces forcibly removed injured protesters from hospitals for interrogation and beat them. And then, of course, on top of all of those violations, the sort of a spate of human rights violations that were documented, there's also then the allegations of ill treatment and torture that came out. And it wasn't just beatings, it was suffocation, it was the use of electric shocks. In Taldy Kurgan, there's quite the high-profile case of policemen that were on trial, subsequently convicted for using irons. I mean, really horrific methods of torture as well. So I just wanted to concur with Yevgeny Alexandrovich in saying that it was a period in which there was a breakdown of law and order in how Kazakhstan's law enforcement responded to the events.
Let me ask you, Miros, has there been, I know there's been a lot of complaints, so there's a lot of parents that are saying that my dead son was not involved with these groups, a lot of people coming forward and saying I was tortured, I want justice. I mean, how is that resonating at all? Are the Kazakh authorities taking this seriously?
They're not denying allegations outright. The government has admitted that six people died in detention as a result of torture. Some law enforcement officers, police officers, have actually been put on trial for on charges of torture. But this is just so. I want to acknowledge the difference between these good steps what we observed in the aftermath of the Jean Lausanne events many years ago, where there was a denial of any kind of torture despite very credible documentation of torture. So there is that difference. However, we're talking about the tip of the iceberg. I hope that Tanya can jump in and talk a little bit about the report that she was involved in that was dedicated to looking at the issue of use of allegations of ill treatment and torture that emerged in the aftermath. But hundreds of people have alleged that they were beaten, that they were subject to harsh interrogation measures, that amount to torture. And we're seeing just a handful of cases that have moved from the investigation or preliminary investigation into courts. And so when we talk about accountability, it's not just acknowledging that there were incidents of torture, it's taking and it's executing an effective investigation. That means a timely investigation, and it means one in which perpetrators are held accountable. So here we are, 1.5 years on, and we have over 1,000 people that have been criminally prosecuted for, you know, participation in mass riots and other alleged crimes that took place in the context of the events themselves. And we can count on one hand, two or three hands, how many police officers have been held accountable, and even less, and we can count on one hand, how many law enforcement officials have been held accountable in connection with the deaths of individuals who were killed during the January events. So I want to highlight that here, when we talk about accountability, we're talking about accountability for torture, and we are also talking about accountability for the loss of life. And to date, there has been exactly one law enforcement officer who has been convicted in connection with the death of a civilian in the January events. And so that disbalance between how many protesters and others have been prosecuted and how many law enforcement officials have been held accountable either for torture or for actions that led to deaths is really stark. And that's where the government has fallen short of its commitments, and where I see a real need and echo the conclusions of the report that we're talking about. Human Rights Watch has also called for this, for the involvement of independent experts to look at the handling of the investigation, because Kazakh government so far has not been able to establish accountability for the human rights, the grave human rights violations that took place last January and in the immediate aftermath.
Okay, thanks. And Tatiana, I'll bring you in just a second, but I just wanted to remind our listeners that I'm here today with Mira Riedman, Senior Central Asia Researcher on Kazakhstan and Uzbekistan for Human Rights Watch, Yevgeny Zhovtis, Director of Kazakhstan International Bureau for Human Rights and Rule of Law, and Tatiana Chernobyl, a human rights lawyer from Almaty who's working with the Coalition Against Torture, a non-governmental organization. And we're talking about the recent report, Shoot to Kill, about the role of Kazakhstan's government and law enforcement during the violence in January 2022 and the investigations and court trials that have followed. Tatiana, please, tell us what, the process, the detentions, the investigations, people that are saying that they're innocent and they were wrongly picked up, or their relatives were killed and they weren't even involved.
Yes, as Yevgeny was saying, everything what was happening during those days was happening in the atmosphere of total lawlessness. And can this be justified by what was happening or allegedly was happening during those events, even if it were a coup? I don't think so, because the procedure and the proceedings, everything should be in place. It shouldn't be. Government shouldn't be taken by surprise if something like that is happening. Yes, indeed, many people were just rounded up, put in police cars or in other vehicles, and taken what seems randomly to random places, not absolutely dedicated to keeping people in detention, as sport halls or somewhere else, military stations. So no safeguards against torture were met, and that's exactly why torture did happen. And what struck me as someone who has been working on torture for many, many years was this feeling that those people who were committing torture, for instance, they were acting knowing that there won't be any accountability for them. So this, that they knew they were acting lawfully or rightly. This is what struck me, because there were so many cases, and that difference in the numbers that Mira mentioned between people who fell victims to those events and people who represented the government, not only for torture or killing someone, because there were many violations of human rights that happened in those events. So that difference in numbers speaks for itself. So no proceedings were followed. And this kept you wonder, what happened to the law? What happened to the rule of law? What was there happening in those events that completely made the system fall to pieces? So I want the answer to this question as well.
Thank you, Tatiana. And Yevgeny, if I could go to you, we've gone through the detention, the violence and the detention process. If we can talk a little bit about the investigations and trials that followed. I mean, you know, we've got hundreds and hundreds of people that are being tried here. Is it your opinion that the courts, you know, paid sufficient attention to this kind of thing? I mean, there's actually trials still going on a year and a half later, but I mean, were the trials free and fair as far as you could see? Did the defendants, after they were, you know, at least charged, did they have access to adequate legal representation? Did the trial proceedings go fairly with the witnesses called and everything? What's your opinion?
First of all, I want to echo what Tatiana said. I'm also very doubtful about the theory that it was the coup d'etat. But the problem is that if we want to have the answer on this question, we have to have the open and free and fair trial against the alleged organizers. But the trial of Mr. Masimov, the head of the Committee on Security, was closed. A number of other investigations are closed, especially when it relates to the members of the intelligence, of the special forces, and so on. A number of investigations on death cases, when the people were murdered, are also in the closed procedure, made secret. That the first problem is that the investigation itself is under the question. Plus, we have to mention one important provision of Kazakh law, which allows the investigators to take the subscription from the lawyers and from the witnesses and from the experts on non-disclosure of any information about the case. And this is what they're using in these cases widely. And that's, first of all, on the pretrial stage, when we're dealing with the investigation as such, we already do not observing any kind of free and fair trial standards, including the equality of arms. Because the problem of for the lawyers, starting from the beginning, where they could have the access to their clients, and ending with the access to the evidence and so on, were already violated. And there was a lot of problems with such investigations. Now we're going to the trial. As I said, we are planning to publish probably in July the report on the right to free and fair trial, which was observed or not observed in the trials related to gender events. But already when we are talking about the trials as such, we see that the courts, in general, if they do not have so-called political instruction to apply amnesty or to be more or less human and so on, they are following the so-called accusatory approach. And I will give the very simple example that the people who were found guilty for torture, which led to the murder of the person in Almaty, some of them were sentenced to 10 years of imprisonment. And at the same time, in another city of Kazakhstan, the protester who was accused at hurting two policemen with the car, where the policemen do not suffer any kind of injuries, he was sentenced, if I'm not wrong, to 18 years of imprisonment. We see inequality even in sentencing. That's, at this point, we could say that as on the stage of investigation, as on the stage of court trial, we are still we are not expecting and not witnessing the observation of the right to free and fair trial, and different approach and selective approach to the protesters who are on trial and the law enforcement.
Thanks. Let me follow up with a question then. Do you have any sense of how many people that were charged with a crime connected with the violence in January, among protesters, civilians, are most of them convicted and sent to prison? How many have been acquitted and how many have been convicted and sentenced?
It's very difficult to say about the figures. First of all, I could say you that what related to the let's say, to the, any kind of theft or attacks on the shops and so on, the authorities tried to go in a more or less moderate manner, and most of them were not sentenced to imprisonment. They were, the alternative sanctions were used in probably 90% of cases. What relates to the those who were involved in the violent actions, there is also the authorities last year declared the amnesty, and they start to use the amnesty in certain cases. In last trials, only two people were sentenced to imprisonment out of probably, if I'm not wrong, 10, and date where either amnesty was used in their cases or they received the alternative sentences, not imprisonment. That in general, not so many people, the authorities tried to keep some kind of sensible approach to look at the situation, not to irritate the public, because it's already the huge tragedy. But at the same time, I think that the figures like about 1,000 probably was tried in that or another way in the January events. I could not say that probably around, at this point, I could not say that several dozens probably were sentenced to imprisonment. But we have to check, because as I said, you, we are still collecting information on monitoring of the trials, which we are executing together jointly with our partners. But in general, as I said already, there is clear, let's say, not equal approach to the protesters and to the law enforcement, because law enforcement are already the subjects of the same amnesty as the protesters.
Okay, thanks. You know, Mira, I'd like to give you a chance to follow up on that a little bit too. Are there two different systems of justice being meted out here? I mean, you know, one for the protesters and another for law enforcement?
Well, I think we can say that the authorities have from the very beginning defended the conduct of security services and law enforcement in responding to the events. And I can just highlight that there are several cities. Shymkent is one of them. I don't have Kizlarda, Taraz, where authorities have closed investigations into the deaths of people killed in those cities on grounds that the actions of law enforcement officers did not constitute a crime. And so, you know, that really suggests to me, to us at Human Rights Watch, that, you know, there's a disregard and somewhat, to some extent, a contempt for justice in looking at the deaths of protesters compared to the role or the actions of law enforcement. And as we've seen in terms of numbers that we're aware of, that there is a very sort of skewed or disproportionate, it's not disproportionate, but that many, many protesters have been prosecuted, whereas law enforcement that has been held accountable are very few in number. And so, yes, I think that indeed the Kazakh government has not set out to effectively investigate and hold accountable law enforcement at the multiple, you know, levels, from those that were perpetrating torture against protesters and detention, all the way up to, you know, higher sort of senior officials who may not have been directly involved in violence but were responsible for giving commands. That has not been the focus of their investigation. The focus of the investigation was very much on prosecuting those who were allegedly involved in the mass riots, quote unquote.
And may I add something, if possible, Bruce? It is important to notice that according to the basic rules of the conduct of law enforcement, which are adopted by UN, one of the key issues whether or not the high rank officers are brought to justice and are held responsible for the actions of their staff. And we do not see any kind of such proceedings in the January events. We had not heard about any, except probably one head of the Almaty regional police, but it is not in connection with murder of people or with the killings or with the torture. We could not hear that somebody of these officers, high rank officers, the heads of the departments and so on, were charged with the wrongdoing because of the torture and killings executed by their staff.
No, great. That's a good point. Thank you for mentioning that. And, you know, and Tatiana, I'd like you to follow up on that. I mean, who you don't have to name names, but what positions, what people should be answering questions about, in your opinion, about what happened in January? Which officials?
The president himself, in the first place. I think we all need some apology from the high officials for what was happening, even if they don't want to disclose or don't know themselves, for instance, or still investigating what was happening, what happened to all of us. At least an apology so far would be good. So the president himself, police ministry, it's the Ministry of Internal Affairs, absolutely. Then I would also say that someone from the Ministry of Information and Public Accord, as it's called here, for all the information that was released by the government in those days, because as you know, the internet was, we were cut off from the internet and we had to rely only on the information that was produced and given to us by the government. So someone from the ideological ministry or department should also explain, if not kept accountable, what was happening. And absolutely, those who cut off the internet, also those people, because of the cutoff of the internet shutdown, mass shutdown of the internet, alongside all, throughout all of Kazakhstan. So there were many violations of human rights that happened. And I mean, not only to the detriment of the people who suffered or who fell victims to the events, but casualties of that internet shutdown, so-called. For instance, people with disabilities who relied on the internet or on delivery of some of the goods over the services that you access by the internet. So they were absolutely cut off that opportunity. So there were many cases documented by us about that. So that Ministry of Digitalization and Information, and the military also Ministry of Defense, I think, those guys. And probably also the Human Rights Ombudswoman. It was an ombudswoman then, now it's an ombudsman. She was she should not be held accountable, of course, because she was one of the first who accessed and got access to the places of detention, but some explanations from her, how she was acting or trying to act.
Okay, thanks. You know, we're getting close to the end of the show, so I'm going to give everyone a chance to say whatever they want to say that I might have missed as a question, but also take into consideration, what would be one of the first steps you would recommend authorities take to try to make this right? And I'll start with you, Mira.
Well, I have two things to say about that. One would be to engage with the contents of this report that was the subject of our discussion today. There are concrete questions that were posed by civil society involved in the drafting of that report, to which they didn't get a response, even though they had reached out to government ministries asking those questions. And there are concrete recommendations for the government. So I'd like to see the authorities really grapple with the contents and the findings and the recommendations and the conclusions, because there's, you know, this is the most comprehensive document to have been published so far on the rights violations that occurred during and after the January events. And I think the government owes it to its citizens and its and civil society that has painstakingly put this together to engage with it. And then in answer to the question about what the government can do, I think at this stage it would do a lot to show good faith in terms of accountability for what happened, to invite international independent experts, non-Kazakh government officials, to work with Kazakh government in investigating what happened in January and taking stock of the human rights violations that occurred to come up with a report of some sort that that really sets out what happened, the violations that occurred, and the steps forward. And that's, you know, there's a lot of distrust of how the Kazakh government has handled both its response to the violence and the events in January itself, but also the investigations that followed. And so I think that, you know, this is, we've heard over and over again calls for an effective, independent, impartial investigation. And it's not too late to do that. You know, people are still looking for justice for their loved ones. And that would be a very meaningful step that the government, the Kazakh government, could take today, tomorrow, to start to address the need for accountability for what happened so that it doesn't happen again.
Hey, thank you. Evgeny?
First of all, I think that we have to learn lessons. We are still following the same mistakes which were done after the events of 1986 in Almaty, 2011 in Zhanaozen, and now 2022 all around the country. This is a problem that we still do not have. In 2011, there was no even any kind of commission or investigation commission or inquiry commission which was created. There was the commission on 1986 Almaty events, which was organized but after the Soviet Union collapsed. And now, again, we do not have any even internal national commission. Look at the parliament. This is another issue. In 2011, in 2023, it looks like we really do not have a real separation of powers, real system of checks and balances, a real role of the parliament as the representative body. Because from my point of view, when the events started, immediately the parliamentary commission should be established and should start the investigation its own. We have investigation by the police or by the prosecutor's offices, police and Committee on National Security, but not investigation in general, not the criminal investigation, but the investigation, the analysis of the whole situation, which was not done by the parliament. And the parliament held hearings only early this year where the general prosecutor reported about the events. There is a lot of problems which, from my point of view, arises out of the political system, of the lack of the rule of law in a sense, in a democratic sense, in the lack of the independent political opposition, lack of independent media, and so on. It's the political issues. It's not only the problems of the law, of the reaction of the government. It's, to a certain extent, from my point of view, reflects the consolidated authoritarian regime in power. And this is a problem. But anyway, we have to keep them accountable, have to call for the international investigation, do what we're trying to do, collecting information and trying to disseminate it. This is what we can and what we have to call on anytime we can.
Okay, thank you, Evgeny. And Tatiana, you get the last word.
Thank you for this discussion. I think what the government owes us is the truth. They should acknowledge the facts. They should acknowledge the truth and face this truth bravely and share this with us until we discuss that openly at a round table, so to speak, the government and the public. There won't be no reconciliation, because you know those commissions, international commissions that are set up in different parts of the world where conflicts happen, truth and reconciliation, they are called. So we won't be able to approach a reconciliation stage until we know the truth. But so far, as we have those cases classified, so far as the government distrusts the public, we will never be able to approach this reconciliation stage. So, yeah, I think we should know the truth. We deserve to know the truth.
Okay, thank you. You know, obviously a huge topic, and I'd like to remind our listeners, too, that you can find this report at one of the places you can find this report is at Yevgeny's organization, and that is bureau.kz, and the report is called Staralasna Porozhenie in Russian. They also have it available in Kazakh. I'd like to thank Yevgeny, Tatiana, and Mira for being my guests today on the program, and a big thank you, as always, to Nathan Shoemaker, our Mezhlis podcast producer in Washington, D.C., and a reminder, you can subscribe to the Mezhlis podcast or the Central Asia in Focus newsletter by visiting Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's website at rfarl.org. Thank you very much, and we'll be back next week. Bye-bye.